조조다 먼저다 도마 탐제 중앙제 시디 당진세 다 강서기 당진세는 시 뒤에다 조조다 다마 강서세디 다 여당 간대지면 약구 마셔가지 강서세디 진상 친절로 여당 친절로 주시면 진바실라 강서기 당진세기
We are now studying tenets. Yeah. So as you know, there are various proponents of Buddhist tenets. And starting from the proponents of the Great Exposition School, then you have the proponents of the Sutra School, the proponents of the Mind-Only School, and then you have the proponents of the Autonomy Middle Way School, and the proponents of the Consequence Middle Way School. All of them claim or assert that that an apprehension of a self, this ignorance or ego grasping, is the source, the basis of all of our sufferings and problems. So this ego grasping or the apprehension of a self is essentially a mistaken mind, a mind that, you know, apprehends, you know, ourselves, apprehend the self or the person or the I, you know, to exist in a way that is, you know, in contradiction to reality.
What tene kansage tangzin sayla, chazanda, ta rangyuwa minchegi, ta kansage tangzin sayla, taraji cheme, ta kansage tangzin rapa, kansage tangzin tamus, taraji so tuksini cheme.
So this apprehension of a self, or in this case, apprehension of a self or person, is the root or the basis or the source of all the problems and suffering. Yeah. So, and according to the proponents of the Great Exposition School, all the way up to the proponents of the Autonomy in Midway School, they have their own presentation as to what constitutes the cause, they have their own particular presentation of what constitutes a selflessness of person. Yeah. So as we have discussed in the previous lesson, there are two: yeah, the coarse selflessness of person, and the subtle selflessness of person. Yeah. Although we are not permanent, you know, the I, the self, the person is not permanent, but we believe, you know, we think strongly, you know, we apprehend ourselves to be unchanging, to be permanent. Yeah. And from our own experience, we can tell that, you know, on the basis of, you know, this belief, you know, in that we will never change, you know, and then we are permanent. And from all my experience, we can tell that this acts as a basis, you know, for the arising of our afflictions, yeah, such as anger, isn't it? Strong anger, strong attachment. Even if we talk about, you know, so I mean this kind of worldview, and this belief in that we will, you know, we are never changing, we are permanent, and it's a very strong belief. Yeah. You know, in this case, you know, it's what we call an apprehension of permanence, isn't it? Yeah, grasping at things which are impermanent to be permanent. Yeah. So, for example, we think that we will live forever, you know, or we will live for a very long time, for example, let's say 100 years, yeah. And so this is a coarse apprehension of permanence, yeah, coarse. And based on this apprehension of permanence, you know, then, you know, it gives rise to all kinds of afflictions,
yeah.
So yeah, we believe, you know, that we will live for a very long time, you know, and forever, for 100 years, you know. So we believe that things are never changing, you know, always, you know, static, yeah. And the basis, you know, for such a worldview, such an apprehension of permanence, you know, comes, you know, from a very innate belief that, you know, that there is a person that is able to stand on his own, a self, you know, a sufficient person. You know.
So
according to this the Great Exposition School, And in fact, you know, all the way up to the autonomy midway school, these tenets, you know, assert that, you know, the subtle apprehension of a self, which is an apprehension of a self, sufficient, substantially existent person, this ignorance, this is the root of samsara, the root of all the problems and suffering. So in order to eradicate suffering, to destroy suffering, we must eradicate the source of suffering, the root of suffering. And the root of suffering here is an apprehension of a self, you know. And so in this case, according to the Great Exposition School, all the way up to the Autonomy Nibui School, it is an apprehension of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, yeah. So this is posited to be the root of samsara, the root of all the problems and suffering. So if you want to eradicate suffering, we have to eradicate this ego grasping, this ignorance, yeah, apprehending a self-sufficient, substantially existent person. And the way to do that is to realize selflessness of person, yeah. Is to generate the wisdom realizing the selflessness of person, yeah. And this is what we're trying to do here.
Atukshini, chazan ta tela kwa cha kwe, ta tanda tiri kapti ta karsana, ta ranjia tibi tibi tongan se, takshir rongan tibi tongan se tila ta kunina te sumen roa yungay, jini ki chabar shen kwe, ta di nega di cha kwe yore, ta kapti ta me chara ni ishaya ki ta kunini ki lui zindan kade yume, lui yula kade zingi yume, ta di ta samba yame no tango ya roa tiri.
So, forming an understanding of what we've just discussed is very important, yeah. Okay. And so now we're talking about the what constitutes an apprehension of a self, a person, isn't it? And the Great Exposition School, all the way up to the Autonomy and Midway School, all agree that that the course apprehension of a self, a person, is the apprehension of a permanent, unitary, and independent self. Yeah, and they all agree that the subtle apprehension of a self, a person, is the apprehension of a self, sufficient, substantially existent person. Yeah, so these two forms of grasping at the self, a person, or these two apprehensions of a self, a person, is they are different. Yeah, one is coarse, one is subtle. So we need to have a good understanding of these two. You know. So these are two different minds. How do they apprehend their respective objects? What is in technical language, and what is their mode of apprehension?
Yeah.
So what I'm going to say is nothing new. Yeah, I've talked about this before, but you should, you know, put effort into paying attention. And so, in if you try to pay attention, then you know the understanding of this subject will become clearer. Yeah. We talk about the self. The self, I or person, we're talking about the same thing, isn't it? Self, I or person. So there is this belief that the self or the I or the person, let's say the self, is permanent. There's this belief that the self is also unitary. There's also this belief that the self is independent. Yeah. So there's such a self, a permanent, unitary, and independent self. So there's such an apprehension, such a mind believing in this. So this apprehension is called the cause, apprehension of a self or person. So this apprehension of a core self, a person, is in mind, isn't it? What is it apprehending? What does it apprehend? What does it grasp at? This coarse apprehension of a self, a person, believes or apprehends the person or the I or the self to be permanent, to be unitary, to be partless, unitary, and to be independent. Such a mind is called the coarse apprehension of a self or person. So when this particular mind apprehends a permanent, unitary, and independent self, so when it apprehends such a self, it apprehends such a self to be of a different entity from the body and mind. And he apprehends that such a self is completely unrelated, not connected to the body and mind. So this coarse apprehension of a self or person apprehends basically the I to be of a different entity from the aggregates, the body and mind, completely unrelated, unconnected to the body and mind. Something that is separate, and completely different. Such an apprehension of a self, a person, an apprehension of a permanent, unitary, and independent self, is said in many treatises to be an intellectually acquired affliction. Such a mind, that thinks, that conceives of the person to be permanent, unitary, and independent, so conception of a soul, an Atman. Such a mind is intellectually acquired. It is something that is formed through thinking. So, wherever you look in the great treatises, they all state that such an apprehension of a permanent, unitary, and independent self is an intellectually acquired one. Having said that, we have to think about it. Why is it? Why is such a mind an intellectually acquired? Why is it not natural? Why is it, what it is said to be something that is a construct, something that comes about through thinking.
So 다 딜레한 때서 뭐가 차야지. 또 왔다 가르치나. 나 강사디 풍보는 맞대베 랑원시 진시다 단다 단제 집에 제일 진도가 강사디 풍보는 맞대베 랑원시 진시
Then you have the subtle apprehension of a self or person, right? And what is that? It's an apprehension of a self-sufficient person, an apprehension of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, right? So how does this mind apprehend the person? Such a mind conceives of the person as self-sufficient, able to stand on his own, separate from the body and mind, yeah? Independent of the body and mind. So, essence is it apprehends the person, the self, to not a person that is not dependent, that doesn't rely on the body and mind. Yeah. So he apprehends such a person to be self-sufficient in a sense, to be independent, to not have to rely, not dependent on the body and mind.
독신이 자장가 강사 수도 풍보를 라마네바 강사 수도 풍보를 온 균에 도시다 동단이 강사 진도 풍보를 마더바치지 풍보를 온 균에 도시다 진바티가로 강사 수도 풍보를 온 균에 지진대시다 로디 So
this subtle apprehension of a self or person apprehends the person to exist in a self-sufficient way, which means not depending on the body and mind, not relying on the body and mind, but rather he apprehends this person to be a controller of the body and mind, to be an owner, the boss, the owner, a controller of the body and mind.
Yeah. 아니 온균이지 풍부한 온균이 나지 아니 망기 차리지.
So this belief, belief in an I that is a controller of the body and mind, which does not rely on the body and the mind, yet is a controller of the body and mind, right? This belief, this apprehension is natural. It's not taught. It's innate. Naturally occurring.
나때 제단가 풍보띠니 나때로 로디기냐 풍보띠니 응아라 소라래 받아. 풍보띠니 소 응아라 소라래 받아 오시. 너와다 풍 가서다. 온 유차다 오시. 나또 풍보띠니 응아디기 온 유차다 오시.
And in the view of this conception, this mind, the aggregates, the body and mind, are dependent on the I, the self. The body and mind are like basically that which is controlled by the self or the person. Yeah. Okay, so you think about this subtle apprehension of a self. You know, we call it an apprehension of a self, sufficient, substantially existent person, right? An apprehension of mind, right? So basically, how does this mind work? What is this mind grasping at? What is it apprehending? It is basically apprehending I, a me, a person, to exist, as a controller of the body and mind. And this person is not dependent on the body and mind, does not rely on the body and mind, but yet is a controller and the owner of the body and mind. Yeah. So this particular mind apprehends the I, the me. I am the controller of my body and mind. I don't depend on my body and mind. I do not rely on my body and mind. Rather, I am the owner and the controller of my body and mind. And my body and mind is that which is controlled by me. And the body and mind is dependent on me. So, unlike the previous apprehension, the apprehension of a permanent, unitary, and independent self, that apprehension, that particular mind, apprehends the body and mind to be completely, to be of a completely different entity, separate, unrelated to the self or person, isn't it? But in this case, in the case of the apprehension of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, it's not like that. It doesn't apprehend the I, the person, to be of a completely unrelated, you know, with the body and mind. Yeah.
Are you sitting somewhere? Near Elgin MRT?
Maybe the aggregates are here, but the I is somewhere else.
I don't know how to make easier than that. So, what's related with this? Reference text, anything about that? Any more clear? The book you are reading, the reference text, what you call it? Cutting through references. You find anything there different? I said. Yeah.
So can I confirm that this innate apprehension of a subtle self, a person, it is not separate, but it is independent. It is not separate because it has some relationship with the aggregates, but it is independent of the aggregates because it is the owner of the aggregates. So it is, has these two qualities, being not separate from the aggregates, but it is independent of these, of them.
So this mind, the apprehension of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, apprehends the I to be not relying on the body and mind, and which means it is independent in that sense.
Yes. being the owner, not relying, therefore it's independent. But at the same time, it is not separate from the aggregates, as different from the coarse apprehension of a self, a person, which is totally, you know, the permanent unitary, this self is totally separate from the aggregates.
Yeah, it's not completely unrelated, you know, these two, the body and mind and the eye, as in the case of the previous apprehension. Yeah. In the case of the apprehension of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, the aggregates of the body and mind are dependent, you could say, relying on the eye. The body and mind are the objects owned by the mind, by the eye.
So is it okay to say that, because, yes, Tuesday's class, the teaching was that it is not separate, not of a separate entity. The eye is not of a separate entity from the aggregates. And also it is independent of the aggregates because it is a controller of the aggregates. So it is not a separate entity because it is not totally unrelated. Yes, some relation. Therefore, it is not separate, not totally separate from the aggregates. Yeah. But it is independent of the aggregates. Because it is a controller of the aggregates, therefore it is independent of them, whereas the aggregates are dependent on the eye. So that means this subtle self or person is both as separate as well as independent at the same time. It's not separate from the aggregates, but also at the same time it's independent of the aggregates from this discussion now.
In the previous apprehension, that mind apprehends the aggregates and the person to be of separate entities, different entities, yeah, individual entities. But in the case of this particular apprehension, there isn't such a manner of apprehension. So, what does the apprehension of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person apprehend? Obviously, it apprehends a person, yeah. But how does it apprehend the person? It apprehends the person to be not reliant, to be not reliant on the body and mind. So it apprehends a self-sufficient person, a self-sufficient person, self-sufficient, that is not reliant on the body and mind. Such a mind is called an apprehension of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, and there are innate forms of such a mind. There's an innate there can be neat versions of such a mind. But such an apprehension of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person is not necessarily innate, isn't it? Because they can be intellectually acquired forms. An apprehension of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person can arise due to thinking, due to a process of thinking, of course, incorrect thinking, But so those are what we call intellectually acquired apprehension of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person. But they can, of course, they are also innate forms, conceptions that arise naturally innate without being taught. So if you remember one of the sub school of the great exposition school called the Vasiputrians, or the followers of Vasiputra. They apprehend, they believe that there is a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, isn't it? And that kind of belief or that kind of apprehension of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person is an intellectually acquired one because it is something that arises through following tenets. So these are the two grasping at the self of a person. I mean, we use the word grasping, but we know, of course, we say apprehension of a self of a person. So they are the coarse apprehension of a self of a person and the subtle apprehension of self of a person. Or you could use the word grasping if you like, but it give you the idea, clinging on, holding on to something. And the absence, the non-existence of these two forms, the absence or the non, basically the non-existence of these two apprehensions is the selflessness of persons. Both, of course, then there's also the coarse selflessness of persons and the subtle selflessness of persons. So the apprehension of a self, an apprehension of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person is a apprehension of a, is a subtle apprehension of a self, a person, right? It's root of samsara, right? Basically, it is a wrong conception, wrong consciousness, right? It is just wrong, plain wrong, right? So basically, when we say that it's plain wrong, basically what we are saying is that although this mind is apprehending a person to be self-sufficient, such a person appears. But essentially what we are saying is such a person does not exist. That's the point, end of the day, right? Although there's an appearance and such a grasping, but the object that it grasps at the end of the day does not exist whatsoever, right? This is what we are saying at the end of the day, right? But we have to prove that, right?
We, 아니 다지 먼저 철기열 때 풍발을 맞아서 다지 여말시도 걸어봐라.
We have to prove that a self-sufficient person doesn't exist, right? Just like we earlier in the previous lesson, we talked about how a permanent unitary and independent self does not exist, right? So likewise here, with regards to the apprehension of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, we have to establish proof that in fact such a person does not exist whatsoever, although it appears, although there is an apprehension of it, but it doesn't exist whatsoever. Yeah. We have to prove.
어떻게 나타나다 바는 초다기 다 남들은 나타 다 이제 벗고 있는 거 같다 근데 스코도 다 풍 갔었나 풍보람 맞더에 라온을 딱 추진했다 라온을 딱 추진했어 다 랑신기 메데스다 봐
랑신
랑신기 영화됐어 랑신원에 좀 영화됐어 풍보람 라온을 딱 추진 랑경원에 투바야 말했어. 랑신기 매대 풍보당 랑신 직당 다대 강도야 모르비시스 다들 또 숙고니 다 투바야.
So according to the great logician Dharmakirti in his Brahmana Vatika, so he stated this line of reasoning. He said, the subject, the self, sufficient person that is not relying on the aggregates, that person, rangshin mede ra. So such a person does not exist naturally because it is by nature not one with or different from the aggregates. Yeah. Okay. So this is the line of reasoning used by Dharmakirti in the Brahmana Vatika. So back again, the subject here is the self-sufficient person. The self-sufficient person that is not relying, yeah. No, that's not relying on the body and mind. So that is the subject of inquiry. So such a person, a self-sufficient person, does not exist naturally. Why? Because it is not established that such an I. Because such an I is not established to be either naturally one with the aggregates or naturally different or by nature different from the aggregates. Yeah.
That's it. You get it? That is some of that. That's all. That's the title of that. Now I'm not saying Ranjay Dax. Well, now I'm not saying Ranjay Tweg Dax. Yama is the problem. That's the problem. 근데 다지 랑경원에 투배 다 근데 랑경원에 투바지 진행이 와 말았어 근데 다 랑경원에 투바지 와 말았어 너 녹대를 두면 랑경원에 두고 가라 봐 자서 랑경원에 투배 근데 다지 자원이 와 말았어 같이 랑경원에 투배 근데 다지 와 있나 내가 풍보다 랑시 찍 내가 풍보다 랑시 타대 강동도 두고 그랬어 근데 강동에 두고 말았어 다시 볼 거야 돼
So this we have this apprehension of a we have such an apprehension of a person that is self-sufficient we believe it appears to us right? So although it appears it doesn't exist yeah in the way it appears this is what we have to establish for ourselves and then of course according to these tenets yeah anything that exists necessarily exists from his own side yeah If it exists, it necessarily exists on its own side, exists inherently, naturally, by its nature. Yeah. So if this self-sufficient person exists, then it has to exist either inherently or naturally by nature, one with the aggregates, or it has to be inherently or naturally by nature different from the aggregates. Yeah. Hello?
Tambo Tila Lequash. Tambo Tama de Guga, Tamati Manina Madame Chumra. Rangoe da, Sri Chusina Sunchi. Tilan Shinki Yamanes. Junzen Quin Dugala, Pombo de Ranchi, Jigdo Yamanes, Tati Yamanes, Tati Yego Tambo.
If first you have to get this line, what we just stated, otherwise we cannot carry on. We try, okay, we try. We are now finally. Is there such a mind or not, an apprehension of a self-sufficient person? You have not. Exists, right? Hopefully, yeah. I mean, we have to recognize it. Okay. So, such a mind is the root of all our problems, right? Right? Troublemaker. So, it is said to be a wrong consciousness. Salah. It's completely off. Right? And why is it called a wrong consciousness? Because, in the first place, what does this mind apprehend? It apprehends itself, right? It's grasping it, clinging on to a person, yeah? But it's not just clinging on to any person. It's clinging on to a person that is self-sufficient. Yeah? Self-sufficient meaning not relying on the body and mind completely, you know, and independent of the body and mind. It's control of the body and mind, right? So there's such a mind, right? Such a belief, yeah? Okay? But it is a wrong consciousness because the I that is apprehended by this mind, this self-sufficient I, does not exist whatsoever. But this is what we're trying to establish. It's not sufficient to say, oh, it's a wrong consciousness, it doesn't exist in the way it appears. But we have to prove, yeah, establish it. And this is what we're trying to do here. So, the great Acharya, great logician, Dharmakati, said that if such an I exists, such a self-sufficient person exists, then it is necessarily either inherently one with the body and mind, or it has to be inherently different from the body and mind. So the reasoning is this. If such an I exists, what is the subject of inquiry here? Is it the I? The self-sufficient I, isn't it? The self-sufficient person is the object of inquiry here. So, we're trying to establish whether it exists or not. If it exists, it can only exist in two ways, basically. The possibilities are exhaustive. It's only two ways. If it exists, it is either inherently one with the body and mind. If not, it has to be inherently different from the body and mind. So, can anyone posit that a self-sufficient person is of the same entity with the body and mind? I think the answer is no. So So if the self-sufficient person exists, it is either inherently one with the body and mind or inherently different. There's an exhaustive here. There's no other way out. So is the self-sufficient person the same entity with the body and mind? No. Why? If the self-sufficient person is of the same entity with the body and mind, just as the person is self-sufficient, then it will entail the fallacy that the aggregates, the body and mind, will be self-sufficient, substantially existent as well, which means the aggregates will exist as something that is not dependent, not relying on something else. You follow, yeah? If the self-sufficient person is of the same entity with the body and mind, that will entail the fallacy that the body and mind would be self-sufficient as well. Because the same entity, what? It cannot exist in having a different nature, isn't it? So just as the person is self-sufficient, then if this self-sufficient person is of the same entity with the aggregates, the body and mind, then that will entail the fallacy that the body and mind would also be self-sufficient, substantially existent. And what does it mean? It means that then the aggregates, the body and mind, would exist without having to rely on something else. Isn't it? That would be the fallacy, yeah. But what's wrong with this? So what's wrong? So what if the aggregates themselves are also self-sufficient, not relying on some other thing? What's the problem? There will be a problem because if we assert that there's nothing wrong in saying that the aggregates themselves are also self-sufficient, just like the self-sufficient person, then it would follow that the aggregates will become permanent. It would follow that the aggregates are not dependent on causes and conditions, which is absurd, isn't it? Yeah, so that would be absurd, yeah, because it's clear that the aggregates themselves are impermanent, that they are relying on, they're dependent on causes and conditions, yeah. They are not permanent, they are impermanent, yeah. They are reliant on causes and conditions, isn't it? The aggregates, the body and mind. So, based on such reasons, you know, as the ones I mentioned, it follows that therefore the self-sufficient person cannot be of the same entity with the body and mind. So, although the self-sufficient person is not of a different entity from the body and mind, but what's the problem if they are different entities? So we have just seen how the self, you remember the object of inquiry here is the self-sufficient person, yeah. If it exists, then he has to exist in either one way, only two ways, yeah. So now we've seen that the self-sufficient person is cannot be of the same entity with the body and mind. Then is it of a different entity from the body and mind? No. But what's the problem if we say that the self-sufficient person is of a different entity from the body and mind? What's the problem? So the self-sufficient person is not of a different entity from the aggregates, the body and mind. Why? Because if the self-sufficient person is of a different entity from the body and mind, then if you eliminate all the aggregates, the body and mind, one by one after the other, after at the end of eliminating all the aggregates, the body and mind, you should be able to find a self-sufficient person that's standing there on his own. Right, if such a person, if such a self-sufficient person exists and existing of with a different entity, as a different entity from the body and mind, so after you've eliminated all the aggregates, you should be able to find the self-sufficient person there.
I mean, those who complete basic program, I think they should understand this one. Yeah. I think we talked this before, yeah? Long time.
So the reasoning of one and many, one or different, we've talked about this numerous times. Yeah, because this is reasoning of one being either one or different. It's an important reasoning that is used, you know, where in the topic of selflessness and emptiness. Yeah. So this line of reasoning comes up all the time in trying to establish the view of selflessness. Yeah, it's an important one. So those of you who have heard this before, now by hearing this again, should be clearer. And for those who are hearing this for the first time, then it is just leaving imprints. That's about it. Most. I thought I was about to speak in Tibetan. what am I supposed to say? Oh yeah, you know, imprints. Imprints definitely work. Yeah. I mean, limbs definitely are left on our mental continuum. Yeah, actually, through hearing, through listening, through thinking, and so forth. Yeah. Okay. So plant the imprints first, and then just hope for the imprints to ripen. Yeah. Okay, so back to the text on page 4. So we look at the presentation of the grounds and paths according to the Great Exposition School. Yeah. So this we explain in two sections. Yeah. The objects of abandonment And the actual presentation of the grounds and paths, yeah. If we regard to the objects of abandonment, there are two types of obscurations that are asserted in this school, yeah. There are the afflictive obscurations and the non-afflictive obscurations. You want to mind that? So there are two types of obscurations, afflictive obscurations and non-afflictive obscurations. In meaning, basically, they refer to what we usually call the afflictive obscurations, afflictive obscurations, and the shedrib. You know, we say obstructions to liberation. Yeah. I mean, of course, we say it all the time, but it's not technically very correct. Yeah. Of course, well, afflictive obscurations, yeah, that which obstructs the attainment of liberation. And then you have the non-afflictive obscurations, which refers to the obstructions to omniscience. Yeah. Okay. But of course, but in this school, it says that there's no such thing as the convention obscurations to knowledge. Yeah. So in this school, obscurations to knowledge, the convention, the term is does not exist for them. Yeah. So usually, you know, we talk about omniscience, the all-knowing mind, and Buddha, the all-knowing mind. You know, we basically is the mind that perceives directly, you know, directly and simultaneously, the modes and varieties of phenomena. Basically, in both. In another way, in English, we say both the two truths, yeah, directly and simultaneously, yeah. Okay, so usually we talk about enlightenment or such a mind and all knower, yeah. But this great exposition school does not assert that there is something like that. The Great Exposition School does not assert or believe that there's such a knower, an all omniscient mind that can perceive, you know, every phenomenon simultaneously, you know, directly in one moment of mind, in one moment of cognition. Yeah. And perhaps due to this belief, therefore, in this school, the convention, the obscurations to knowledge or obscurations to omniscience does not exist here. Perhaps. So I'm not exactly sure whether this is the reason why the convention obscurations to knowledge is not it does not exist in this school, but perhaps due to what I've said. Yeah. The convention doesn't exist, is it? Because in other schools and all agree that the omniscient mind directly perceives all phenomena in one moment as clearly as as clearly as how we will perceive, you know, a bunch of fruits, you know, or seeds, you know, on our palms. Yeah. So the Great Exposition School basically says that there isn't such a knower, there isn't such a mind that can directly perceive every single phenomenon in one moment of cognition.
So
basically the proponents of the Great Exposition School find it difficult to conceive that there's such a being, there's such a mind, Buddha. I mean, the Buddha is like that. And this Great Exposition School, the proponents of this school, assert that the Buddha's physical aggregates, the form aggregate of Buddha, right, is true suffering. Whereas everybody else assert that it is the Buddha's form aggregate is Buddha. Yeah? They say it's suffering, it's true suffering, just like the body that we have. So there are two, according to this school, there are two types of obscurations, afflictive and non-afflictive. Yeah. And the convention, the term, obscurations to knowledge, or obstructions to omniscience, does not exist. Yeah. Okay. So afflictive obscurations mainly prevent the attainment of liberation, and non-afflictive obscurations mainly prevent the attainment of all-knowingness, yeah, or omniscience. Yeah. So, illustrations of the first one, the afflictive obscurations, are, for example, the conception apprehending the person to be self-sufficient, substantially existent, and the three poisons that arise due to the force of that conception together with their seeds. So the conception apprehending the person to be self-sufficient, substantially existent is an apprehension of a self, right? And it is an afflictive obscuration. Okay, so such a conception of a person to be self-sufficient, substantially existent is the basis, the root. Yeah. Arising from that are the three mental poisons, ignorance, anger, and attachment. Yeah, okay. And together with the seeds here, the seeds here refers to the seeds that are imprinted by, the seeds that are planted or placed by the conception apprehending a person to be self-sufficient, substantially existent, and also referring to the seeds that are placed by the three mental poisons, ignorance, anger, attachment. So all of these together, all these are also considered to be afflictive obscurations. Yeah. Illustrations of non-afflictive obscurations are, for example, the latency is pakcha. Whether you call it imprint, predisposition, latencies, proclivities, there's different English words, yeah, but I do not know which is conveys the meaning best. But anyway, here is latencies, the word latency is used. Yeah. So the latencies of the conception, or latencies of which, of what? The latencies of the conception apprehending the person to be self-sufficient, substantially existent, and the negative tendencies, this is a difficult word to translate, very difficult. So translated as negative tendencies, I think the Lambin Chenmo, they translate it as dysfunctional tendencies, I think. Anyway, the negative tendencies of the mind, they arise due to the force of those latencies. Mm.
어떠시네. 다 지난다 망보시라 갑발로 다 박자세 사본세 다 망보시라야. 결집 과정은 이 모두가. 네, 권이 다양. 갑발로 다 직발로 그 시간 그 이나 다 갑지 샤도 말은 강라 사본이라. 강사단계 집에 제일 집에 샤 사본스티 이 문제 기지 말했어. 강사단계 집에 제일 집에 샤 박자디 이 문제 많이 기지 말했어. 권이 강하셔.
In the word for seed is sabun, and the word for latency is pakcha. Yeah. So sometimes the, when casually, sometimes they're translated and using the same word. Yeah. And sometimes it works. Sometimes it's okay, depending on the context. But these two, you have to say most of the time they're different. Yeah. And in this case here, the seeds, they are the seeds of the three mental poisons and the seeds of the conception of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, these are posited to be afflictive obscurations, whereas the latencies, you know, of the conception of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person is considered to be a non-afflictive obscurations. Yeah. So they're different. Yeah. So seed and imprint, or seed and predisposition, or seed and latencies.
So,
The latencies of the conception apprehending the person to be self-sufficient, substantially existent, the latencies of the imprint is planted or by the conception itself, right? The conception of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person. But when we talk about the seeds of this conception, the seed is planted also by the same conception, the conception of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person. Then what's the difference between the seed and the latency? You know? Yeah. Both are planted by the same conception, isn't it? So whatever that is planted, if that has the potential, the power to arise in the future, that same conception, the conception apprehending a person to be self-sufficient, substantially existent, then that is called a seed.
Yeah.
Okay. The seed that is planted by the conception apprehending a self of the seed that is planted by the conception apprehending a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, if that seed has the power to produce in the future this conception, then that will be called the seed of the seed that's planted by the conception apprehending a self-sufficient, substantially existent person. Oh my God.
That is my Pacha Sidogala, Ranjat to be Zed, Pacha Sidogala, Teta Chipa Chagia Mare, Ranjat to be Zed, Zimbe Shava Dere, Pachati, Inaya, Tedo Pachati, Karechigare, and Chisu, Ranjat to be Zed, Zimbadi, get to be your mare, give me to watch it. Now I'm some shita. Kansa Ranjawa, some naikita, Nam some shaggy.
The latencies of the conception apprehending the person to be self-sufficient, substantially existent, the latencies are also placed or planted by the conception, yeah, the same conception. Yeah. But the latencies or the predispositions or the imprint are obviously different from the seed. Yeah. The latencies of the predispositions or the imprint that's planted by this conception does not have the power to produce in the future a conception of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person. But what it produces is just an appearance. There is still the appearance of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, but it's not able to produce a conception of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person. What it produces is only a mere appearance of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person. Yeah. So that's the difference. Yeah. What? Perhaps the analogy of an onion and the smell of an onion would help. Yeah. That is something that is able to produce just the smell of an onion, but not the onion itself. Yeah. So that you could liken that to be analogous to the imprint or the latencies or the predispositions of the conception of a self-sufficient, substantial existent person. But then there is something that is able to produce not just the smell of the onion, but also the onion itself. Yeah. So that so there is something that produces an onion, that is analogous of the seed, really.
Onion is more easy. Yeah.
Huh? Well, unfortunately, the poor onion is considered to be black food. It's so helpful. Yeah. Then you have the words, the phrase, the convention, negative tendencies of the mind, isn't it? So negative tendencies or dysfunctional tendencies. What does it do? You know? It clouds the mind. It clouds the mind. It kind of obstructs the mind from knowing the object. Yeah. It's like, you know, and when we talk about the qualities of Buddha, they're what we call free from the four unknowings. Yeah. Anyway, there's such a thing. So the example given in the text is, for example, the Arhat Shariputra. Yeah. He was not able to tell, for example, how many of the total number of the practices of morality that the Buddha accumulated. Not able to tell exactly each and every single quality in the Buddha's mind. Yeah. So there's this factor of unknowing, unknowingness. Yeah. So this is posited to be this factor of unknowing or unknowingness. Yeah, is a non-afflictive obscuration. Yeah.
The Mongol Yipu, then 아니 사람 김 마 시제다. 가르쳐라 보겠지. 다 창조 오세진 신도 진짜 깨봐디. 다 망고기 그 마통 왔을 때. 봐봐 산적이지. 망고기 똥아 되지. 다 유 타는 거 쉬고 이제 깨봐 망치. 다 망고도 그 시마도 같이 나는 막 가왔지. 이때 미셔봐 돼야. 다 창조 타그리면 또 미셔봐 어떤 내용이야. 배트네 자식.
So yeah, so that is an example of a factor of unknowingness with regards to objects or phenomena. They are very obscure, very subtle. Yeah. Then another example is to do with distance. So the Arhat Magariyayana, despite being an Arhat, couldn't see where his mother was born. His mother was born in the God-forsaken place. No, I mean, not God. Somewhere very far, somewhere, I don't know what's the name of Changzhou Ozechen, I don't know how you translate that, but anyway, some very far distant place, yeah, but you know, so he couldn't see, so because due to distance, yeah. Okay, so there's the factor of unknowingness with regards to obscure phenomena. So then there's the factor of unknowingness with regards to distance. Yeah. Because being too far, so cannot perceive. Yeah. So these factors of unknowingness are all posited to be non-afflictive obscurations. Yeah. Then there's also a factor of unknowingness with regards to time. So for example, you remember in the Lambrim teachings, yeah, so there's this story about how Shariputra didn't want to ordain. There's this particular lay person because he couldn't see. He thought that this lay person didn't have any roots of virtue to be ordained and to achieve liberation. Yeah. But the Buddha could see. Buddha was all omniscient. Buddha said, no, 100 eons ago, some very too long ago, you know, while he was a fly, you know. And then who for whatever reason went around the stupa, oh, the Buddha said, oh, that he has the roots of virtue to be ordained. And then to achieve liberation. Yeah. So Shariputra couldn't see it. Yeah. So that's a factor of unknowingness with respect to time. Yeah. So that is also posited to be. The factor of unknowingness is an illustration of non-afflictive obscurations. Yeah.
어떤 데서 드네 아주 등기 남탕 다 등기 야와 신도 겨쳐 이제 망보지 다 심도 안 나서 봐 아니 깨네 나서 봐 아니 겨와 때라 저러다 아니 용대 딘도야 치다와 시시만 되시 또다 등기 야와 남탕 망치에 또 비치다와 시시만 되시 용도시
Another is a factor of unknowingness with respect to a great variety of a factor of unknowingness that happens due to not be able to figure out the complexities of situations or things, you know, just because there's too many, numbers involved, yeah, too many. For example, not be able to sort out, you know, for example, the past lives of an individual, oh, you know, all the different past lives, you know, great number of past lives, all those details. And so,
yeah.
Yeah, so there's this factor of unknowingness due to the complexity of the great variety of objects in question and the complexity of the situation. So the example given in the text is, for example, you know, you have a peacock's, fan, you know, this design, yeah, different colors, shapes, and details, and all of those are the results of their individual causes, yeah. So not being able to see exactly what was the cause of those individual colors and designs and so forth, it's complicated, basically, yeah.
So tindegi ota tindegi tan la misheba chiyare sa ta da ju be la ya ot tindegi misheba mo chiyare chi ota ta ni mo da ma re ro ta ni mo ma te ni misheba chiyare chi ta misheba di ani chi ta ni mo jo mai bichi ba re sa ta ta.
So there are many such factors of unknowingness in the mental continuum of four destroyers, arhats, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, many things that they do not know. But this, not knowing these different things, this not knowing is not an affliction, yeah. It's not an affliction, yeah. But it is an obscuration, yeah. And it is a non-afflictive obscuration, yeah. A person is called a four destroyer because of having abandoned or destroyed the afflictions. Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to destroy anything and something other than that, yeah. So we have to know, according to this school, what are the afflictive obscurations, what is posited to be the afflictive obscurations, and what is posited to be the non-afflictive obscuration.
Yeah.
The afflictive obscurations prevent or interferes or hinders the attainment of liberation, whereas the non-afflictive obscurations interfere, hinders, prevents the attainment of what does it say? I must be careful. All knowingness. So because of this, therefore, there's a differences in what exactly is being obstructed. Yeah. So therefore, you have these two obscurations. Yeah. So there's the convention, the three vehicles, right? The three yanas. So the three vehicles are the hearer's vehicle, the solitary realizer's vehicle, and the bodhisattva vehicle. So there are five paths, yeah? How many paths are there? Five. The paths of accumulation, the path of preparation, we translate as path of preparation, yeah. And the path of seeing, the path of meditation, and the path of normal learning, yeah. So there are the five paths of the hearers. So you have the path of accumulation of the hearers, path of preparation of the hearers, and so forth. Yeah. So there are the five paths of the hearers, the five paths of the solitary realizers, and the five paths of the bodhisattvas. Yeah, so that's on page 5 of the text, yeah, page 5 and 6. So. So yeah, you can read this on your own. Yeah, so you can read page 5 and 6, and see, you know, what is the fruit of attainment of these respective paths. Yeah. Okay, you have any questions? Okay. Questions maybe now for the Sunday discussion group. Yeah. Is there a difference between a Buddhist and a proponent of Buddhist tenets? Same question. Continuing, does a proponent of Buddhist tenets necessarily have to assert the four seals? Or necessarily accept the four seals? Yeah. Accept. What is the difference between the two truths here in this school? That's the next question. What is the difference between the two truths here? If it is an ultimate truth, is it necessarily partless? What is the difference in the mode of apprehension of the two apprehensions of a self? So is there a difference, or is there a difference in the mode of apprehension of the, you know, of the two apprehensions of a self or person? Is there a difference in the mode of apprehension of the coarse and subtle apprehension of a self or persons? So the point of these questions is to help you gain a really an understanding of what the four seals are and what are the differences between the two truths Or you could say, basically, if you think about it, is to help you understand what are the two truths according to the Great Exclusion School, and also to understand the difference between the two apprehensions of a self or person.
Yeah.
So, because if you really understand the two truths and the differences between the two truths in the Great Exhibition School here, then you would definitely, by the way, come to understand what is the meaning of imputed existence and substantial existence. And if you understand, you feel, you know, see the difference between these two, imputed existence and substantial existence, it makes a difference to the mind, you know. Yeah, imputed existence and substantial existence. So, for example, if you come to understand how the self of this life, the specific, we're talking about not the self in general, but the specific self of this life, the specific person of this life, the I of this life. So according to this school, the I of this life is a conventional truth, yeah, and which therefore makes it an imputed existence, yeah. Of course, it is not the same meaning as the higher school when we talk about how the person is imputedly existent, yeah, according to the higher school. But nevertheless, you come to have some understanding of what is imputed existence. So, yeah, something to think about it. I guess, you know, you think about it, then you probably have to say that the I of this life, the specific I of this life, not the self in general, yeah. The I, the self of this life, the person of this life, I, the identity, basically, in simple English, yeah, this is a conventional truth, which is an imputed existence, as opposed to the I, the self in general. That would be a substantial existence. Yeah. Yeah. But I'm not saying 100% is like that, yeah, but some perhaps it's like this. Yeah. So something to analyze, to think about, yeah. So by understanding, you know, the presentation of the two truths, and in so doing you come to understand imputed and substantial existence, you know, this crucial understanding will serve as a platform to appreciate and understand, you know, the next higher school and the next higher school's presentation, you know. Yeah. So therefore, the understanding of the lower schools are important, and it's a platform. Yeah. So there's nothing much left of the Great Exposition School. I guess we should be able to finish it in the next lesson, yeah. And the subtle apprehension of self or person, yeah. If you have any question, maybe we have time for one, maybe.
Just for one, yeah.
Ken Rinpoche. Over here, we are talking about, selflessness of a person, right? So for a wisdom realizing selflessness of a person, subtle selflessness of a person, what does this wisdom realize actually? Because the person exists, right, according to this great exposition school. So how is it smooth of existence?
What are you talking about?
Okay, like for the higher school, when we talk about the I, we say that the I is merely imputed.
What's your question?
So for this school, how does the I exist actually?
Is it different, huh? Beginning one?
Same. Because when the wisdom realizing the self-life,